Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, bringing you the best of my Times radio show, Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. It's a new week, and as ever, we try to focus on the positive. So on today's show, we are discussing your big ideas. A competition has been launched, £25,000 up for grabs, for big policy ideas that could make the country better. So I asked you last week to send them in. We had so many, and we whittled them down, and we've got some of the best coming up, and some policy experts pick over them to say whether or not they would work. But first, it's our columnist panel. It's Monday, so it must be Liberace. That's Libby Purvis and Rachel Sylvester. Now that we had a new word for the lexicon introduced over the weekend in the Sunday Times, Hancockian. It's apparently the word used by Boris Johnson, of all people, to describe a target which is a little bit unrealistic, or certainly stretching, I think is how Matt Hancock would describe it. We started with testing 100,000 people a day. That then became, I think, 500,000 people a day. There's now a target of offering all over 18s a vaccine by the autumn. We've got the vaccination of priority groups by February the 15th. Are these targets a good way for the government to aim high, or do they force them to sort of concentrate on the wrong things and forget about the impact on other parts of life? What do you think, Libby?
Well, I was once on a charity committee which spent 45 minutes debating whether our target should be to have 82% of people approving of its work by 1999 or 99% of under 25s by 1987. And when I asked why we couldn't just talk about getting more people to like the charity instead, I got slapped down by an ex-BBC man, as it happens, though it was a charity, for not understanding why target setting was itself an important target. And I don't like the obsession with targets. If we have to have them from government, let them be short-term. Like, we'll get the vaccination centres up and running by Tuesday, and we are increasing the testing, end of. I would feel more comfortable with that, because I just think it creates a kind of dream world la-la land, and it gives people yet another stick to poke the government with, and there are enough of them.
Rachel, there's also a difference, isn't there, between sort of Hancockian targets, which, like Libby says, have a specific date. So we will vaccinate 13 million people by February the 15th. Very specific. We know whether or not that's going to work. Once you start getting to talking about the spring and the autumn, one man's autumn is another man's, you know, basically Christmas. It becomes less useful, possibly. What do you think, Rachel?
Well, it's actually, I would say it's Johnsonian as much as Hancockian. The Prime Minister's the person who has this sort of absolute optimistic desperation to overpromise the whole time. And it's always the case, isn't it, that prime minister's greatest strength then becomes their greatest weakness. And Boris Johnson's is this kind of happy clappy optimism, everything's going to be okay, you know, we'll be out of this by Christmas, we'll be out of this by Easter, whereas actually there's a danger with that, that you then it becomes wishful thinking. And then also, as soon as you're over-promising and under-delivering, you then you end up losing public trust. And now, more than ever in a pandemic, you need the public to trust what the government's saying. And if they're constantly over-promising and under-delivering, then that's going to have a real impact on public health and what people do, because they're not going to believe them when they say, actually, it is now really bad, you've got to stay at home.
Yeah, Libby, it did make me chuckle when I read that Boris Johnson, and I think Simon Case, who's the new Cabinet Secretary, were mocking Matt Hancock. I went back and looked at it, and you remembered it in March, Boris Johnson said we're going to turn the tide in 12 weeks. Yes. In May, we were going to be near normality by the end of July. By July, it was significant normality by Christmas.
Exactly.
In September, it was back to normal by Christmas. By October, some aspects of our lives were back to normal by Christmas. And then by October, very different and better by spring. Then Christmas became the new Easter. And now we're being told autumn.
Well, the whole, honestly, this year has been like being taken through a horror movie by Bertie Wooster, hasn't it? With the Prime Minister's speeches. I love bouncy optimists. I am one myself. But you just need to rein it in. And I think the over-promising has been a big problem. I hope what's happening at the moment is they're under-promising and we're all going to be out of it sooner. But that's the kind of bouncy optimist I am. Luckily, I have no power.
Rachel, I'm going to make the counter-argument now that if Boris Johnson had stood up in March and said, listen, it's going to be 18 months of misery, get ready for it, gird your loins, brace yourselves, it's going to be just hideous for the next 18 months, would we have gone along with it? Is there a part of the Prime Minister's job is to, whether or not, you know, we look back and laugh and say, well, he got that wrong, he got that wrong, is just to get us to stick to what we're supposed to be doing right now. And if that means dangling a bit of normality a bit earlier than it really is realistic, as long as that gets us to do what we're supposed to do, like, you know, this current lockdown we're in. If you said it's for 12 months, we'd all be out having coffees on benches with people and breaking the rules. But by saying, look, you know, it's for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, actually, that feels manageable, and psychologically, it's slightly easier to deal with.
I think the problem is the wishful thinking, government by wishful thinking, is actually making them take the wrong decisions. So think about Christmas. Because of sort of wishful thinking, they thought, oh, it's okay, we can let lots of people meet other households over Christmas. And we're now quite literally paying the price, aren't we, for that? That there are more cases have gone up dramatically. And so it's not just that it's the sort of short term wishful thinking is affecting the decisions that the government's making. So it's not just the sort of happy clappy, you know, boosterist rhetoric. It's actually they're making decisions based on wishful thinking. And that's what's gone wrong.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the there was a real sense in Tim Shipman's write up in the paper yesterday, in the Sunday Times yesterday, that the, you know, Boris Johnson, his optimism means that he's always waiting for something else better to come along, and it doesn't. We end up having to do something even worse than we might have had to.
Exactly, because you've sort of delayed it, so you're going to have to eat the nasty tasting medicine in the end. But by putting it off, it almost tastes worse. You've got to eat more of it.
Let's move away from coronavirus. Hurrah, says the nation. Let's talk about your column today, Libby. It's a lovely column because you talk about how when we lose either as a great entertainer or a great teacher, we all sort of want to pass on what that particular person gave us. And you cite people like whether it's Victoria Wood in entertainment or Marie Curie in science and Elizabeth Garrett Anderson in medicine and lots of heroines and heroes in politics too. But you've chosen a slightly lesser well-known person who sadly died last week.
Well, yes, Catherine Whitehorn. I mean, and obviously there's some kind of eyebrows maybe raised, you know, why does one columnist, you know, go on and on about a greatly famous columnist on another paper? But Catherine Whitehorn was astonishing. She was a trailblazer. You know, she was sort of 40 years in The Observer. And she was one of the first women to sort of step lightly and unresentfully into a very masculine, heavy-duty world and just talk about things and write about things which really mattered. to ordinary people, but without a kind of victimhood or a tub thump, you know, just pointing out how absurd and ridiculous certain things were and how absurdly and ridiculously some people behaved. And she was wonderful on the whole daily life thing. Her famous book, of course, was Cooking in a Bedsitter, you know, which was a generation of women who were living independently in bedsitters on their own after the war, when people already sort of, they were still thinking, oh, you know, girls should just get married and shut up and obey their husbands. And that whole world she evokes. But I do quote at the end something which I thought was relevant to lockdown, as we always talk a bit about lockdown, was she had a brilliant principle. It was called the seeing as you're miserable anyway principle, which is that if you're heartbroken or upset or you've been snubbed or lost your job, this is the time to clean the bathroom and worm the cat, seeing as you're miserable anyway. Get it over. So I'm doing all these hideous jobs around the place, you know, just because what's the point? I can't do anything else and nothing else in life.
What about you, Rachel? Who are your lesser known heroes and heroines?
Well, what I wanted, the Ladies' Column made me think, what I loved about Catherine Whitehorn is it's that sense of there's an idealised version of what women are meant to be like, and we're all supposed to be endlessly able to balance cooking fairy cakes and a school run and then working from home. And you've seen that more than ever during the lockdown. But what she does so brilliantly is to say, actually, we're all hopeless and flawed the whole time, and it's all a sort of muddle. And there's a brilliant column she did about the sort of slut principle, which nothing sexual, but about how the fact that you always got holes in your tights. So when you take them off, the sort of black pen over your legs, the Dalmatian effect. And that sense of, we've had this sort of, and it's still there, I think. If anything, it's got worse. This idealized vision of what women are supposed to be like, and anything that debunks that, I think, is fantastic. And also the sort of stereotypes of what women are interested in. So, you know, actually, women are interested in politics. Well, my favorite interview last year wasn't to do with any sort of, you know, supposedly womanly thing. It was two footballers, Marcus Rashford and Alex Ferguson. That was, and they were talking about their childhoods and how their own sort of impoverished childhoods sort of drove them on. That, to me, I found absolutely fascinating. So that sense of debunking the stereotypes of what women are supposed to be like, I think, is brilliant.
Absolutely. Last word to you, Libby.
On Catherine, well, she, I mean, that kind of sturdy, resigned common sense is just the greatest thing you can ask for in that kind of commentator. And it's quite difficult to do, actually, because it's far easier to sort of rant and shriek and say men are horrible and, you know, life is terrible and women are victims and so on. It's far easier to do that than it is to have any kind of comradely balance. I mean, men adored Catherine Whitehorn. She had this great gift of sort of comradely friendship between the sexes, which is a very valuable thing, you know, sort of the men as brothers, you know, men as cheerful brothers, you know, sometimes idiots. Her wonderful sort of cartoon was of Incapability Brown, you know, the chap who never quite does his job. I think she was tremendous.
Libby Purvis and Rachel Silvester there. Don't forget you can read them both in the Times every week. Libby on a Monday, Rachel on a Tuesday. To do that, you need to get yourself a Times digital subscription. Just go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, it's your big ideas.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Now, it's your big ideas. Why are we asking for these big ideas? There's a competition that's been set up in the memory of Lord Hayward of Whitehall. Now, Jeremy Hayward, as he was then, was Cabinet Secretary, the most senior official in the country, sitting right next to the Prime Minister at the Cabinet table, did it for both David Cameron and Theresa May until his death in 2018. Inviting people to come up with tangible ideas, big or small, to improve Britain as it emerges from the 2019 pandemic. The competition comes with a £25,000 top prize. You've been sending in lots of your ideas. We'll hear more of them shortly. But first, Lord O'Donnell, Gus O'Donnell, who was Jeremy Hayward's predecessor as Cabinet Secretary, is involved in the challenge. He's on the judging panel and he joins me now. Morning, Gus.
Good morning.
So explain
great intro.
We've got loads more ideas to come. What's the idea behind this prize and how realistic is it that one of these ideas becomes a policy?
Sure. I think the idea behind the prize is to something that was close to Jeremy's heart and mine was not all of purity enough. The wisdom in the world is surrounded, is in Whitehall. And we need the public. We need people who are closer to the ground, people who can see things that you miss when you're too close, to actually present those ideas. And, you know, in your intro, you came up with some that I thought were pretty possible, pretty practical, that might be implemented. And we just need that diversity of thought. There are lots of people like me and Jeremy in the civil service, but actually lots of different people have different ideas, look at things in different ways. And that's what we're after, some unusual but practical suggestions. And I'm sorry, Paul, but free pizzas doesn't crack it.
And when you
we are intending, just to be absolutely clear about this is serious, right? Michael Gove is on the judging panel. The best ideas will go before Michael Gove. I've been talking to people in the Treasury. The Treasury is really interested in this. There's a spending review coming up. We will put the best ideas to the Treasury for them to think about in the spending review as well. So I can not guarantee that any of these will be taken up, but I guarantee that we'll put them in front of people who have the power to make those decisions.
What a great opportunity for someone who spent, you know, months or years yelling at the radio, why don't you just do this? Yeah. When you were the Cabinet Secretary, sitting at the Cabinet table, surrounded by ministers, how much did you, was it a job in which you saw lots of good ideas, you know, come to die, you know, getting tied up in red tape? Is that really what happens with the good ideas? Or do most of the good ideas, are they the ones that survive and there's always a reason why what appears to be a good idea doesn't go forward?
Yes, in general, you'd like to think that the good ideas mostly come through. And, you know, I've lived there and I've seen that. But what I've seen is outsiders. I talk about people like, dare I say, Dominic Cummings, Steve Hilton, lots of these kind of unusual special advisors. And they come in and they throw 10 ideas at you. And to be honest, quite often 9 of them are completely stupid, right? And you spend your time stopping them. But there's one in there that's a gem and it's worth its weight in gold. And it's getting those sorts of ideas from people. And mostly they're ones that are apparent from someone who's very close to the action. So someone who's working in a charity, someone who's working in a local authority. They're the kinds of things you can miss when you keep looking at the big picture.
And is there anything that you, a big idea which has caught your eye at the moment? I know you don't want to like preempt the competition, but anything, maybe you're going to, presumably you can't enter if you're a judge, but if you were going to enter, what would be your big idea?
My big idea would very much be around the education side of things, and think again about what's the goal of education. I think when we've seen these exams cancelled and all the rest of it, beginning to think, well, what actually is it? Is the goal of education just passing certain exams, or is it to develop people who will have worthwhile and satisfying lives in the future? And in which case, you know, and clearly contributing to society and caring about society, caring about each other. So I think it will be education. There's a lot of ideas have come into the website already, a lot around that, getting the nation fighting fit, learning from, dare I say, our Prime Minister's experience, you know, having the disease, that actually being fit is really, really good idea, and it will put you in a good stead if you do get ill in various ways. So I think all of this online stuff, God bless Joe Wicks, you know, I'm into online yoga. I now know about downward facing dogs and the warrior pose, you know. I mean, we've all expanded into new ways, and actually trying to keep those habits going forward and thinking about what were the barriers to that and how can we get rid of them? You know, and I think making things easy, making it easy to do the right thing is a kind of very basic principle of behavioral economics. And I think that's what we need to do. And I think the fact that the Joe Wicks videos were there and easy for people to pick them up, you didn't need any training, you just do them in your own home safely. I think those sorts of ideas, really, really useful.
Well, Gus, I'll tell you what, stay there, because in just a sec, we're going to hear some more of the ideas sent in by Times Radio listeners. And we've got two policy experts from opposite ends of the political spectrum who also tell us if they are doable or not. That's next on Times Radio.
Times Radio with Matt Chorley.
So for the last few days on Times Radio and the Red Box podcast, I've been asking you for your big, brilliant, blindingly obvious policy ideas which would make the country better. I'm joined now by two policy experts to cast a critical eye and ear over them. Matt Kilcoyne is from the Adam Smith Institute, which it's fair to say is on the right of the political spectrum. Matt, are you happy with that as a description?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
We call ourselves neoliberal.
Very good. Neoliberal, there we go. And Polly McKenzie was policy chief to the Lib Dems in government, now runs the Demos think tank, which is more to the left, Polly.
No, sorry.
You don't like that, do you? You get cross if I say that.
Anti-partisan liberal, that's me.
Fine, anti-partisan liberal, we'll take that. It's a slightly longer business card, but we're happy with that. Yeah. Okay, we've also still got Gus O'Donnell on the line. So we were inundated, and I asked people to send in their voice notes so we could hear their them espousing their ideas themselves. One or two did, so we had them voiced up by some people as well. But here is a selection. We had so many of these, but here is a selection of the best ideas. Kicking off with Times Radio listener Dean Fell.
How about a national health service for pets, funded by a national insurance scheme? Essentially, a national veterinary service offering treatment free at the point of delivery. I appreciate it's hardly the big, earth-shattering political idea like world peace or eliminating poverty, but my gut is that it might prove surprisingly popular with many people.
Next up, Elizabeth East with an idea for changing how we run elections.
My big, blindingly obvious idea is to start holding elections on a Saturday, making it equally easy for all ages to vote. By holding elections on a day when most people aren't at work, we'd increase turnout for under 65s and so encourage parties to consider the interests of all ages equally when thinking about policy and to think longer term.
Samuel Kind also wanted to change our election system.
Proportional representation, valuing every vote equally, each vote being worth the same, and each vote being equally represented. By listening to each other and representing each other fully and fairly for the first time, that's how we can move the country forward.
Times Radio listener and Twitter user Soup Tomato Soup had this plan to tackle speeding.
Rolling speed cameras. Likely to be unpopular, but for motorway safety, commercial lorries could be incentivised to have a speed camera on its front. A tax break on mileage seems most proportionate, so that the generally steady speed of a lorry can be used to measure the relative speed of vehicles that pass, can be caught and fined if observed speeding,
Next, David Walsh and his plan to reform childcare.
My big policy idea is to scrap David Cameron's policy of 33 hours childcare for 3 and 4 year olds and replace it with means-tested free childcare for 1 and 2 year olds. If the government provided free childcare for 1 and 2 year olds, when parents who want to work need it most, and targeted that at those on lower incomes who need the most help, rather than being available even for couples with a combined salary of up to 200k, as is currently the case, hundreds of thousands of women could return to work if they chose to do so.
We had a lot of ideas about housing, like Kate Gavon on her plan to change the way we tax property.
The solution is simple. The tax should be levied based on the most recent sale price of the property. There would be no argument about valuation. The values would rise and fall as the market changed, and there would be no need for either separate valuations or for an appeal process.
Shane Irwin had an idea for how councils could make money from homes.
Councils in England own 1.3 million acres of land collectively. And planning permission can increase land value by up to 10%. My policy proposal is that councils should be encouraged to grant planning permission on the land that they own and sell it on to developers. They could then use the proceeds from this to buy more land and grant themselves further permission and sell it on. It could help generate a steady revenue stream for local councils to invest in local services, and it would really help alleviate housing shortages.
Sue Dudridge had a plan to tackle the scourge of second homes.
We face a housing shortage and escalating house prices that puts home ownership out of the reach of many, particularly in rural areas. If not ban, then tax out of existence second homes. Don't let the outraged wealthy, with their car boots full of Waitrose groceries, get away with the argument that local economies will collapse without second homers.
And finally, Times Radio listener Adam Peake had a real vote winner.
July the 5th, 2021 will be the 73rd anniversary of the creation, the establishment of the NHS and the social care services that we enjoy and particularly have relied upon over the past year. July the 5th is a Monday this year, and I suggest that we establish a new national bank holiday, a day to remember not just the NHS and the care services we enjoy, but all of those who have provided and will continue to provide services we rely upon. Everybody needs an extra holiday, and it's a good thing to remember.
Well, a lot of ideas to pick over there. Before we come to Matt and Polly, Gus, because I know you've got to leave us in a couple of secs. Gus O'Donnell's still with us, former Cabinet Secretary. Any in there that leap out to you as being a good idea, Gus?
I love the idea of making elections more democratic. The constituencies are very, very different sizes, and there have been various suggestions about making them the same size so that votes count the same. I like the idea of having elections on Saturday. I think that's really good. That's one that I would go for. Housing and the tax on the sale price, I mean, we all know I was around when we put council tax in place to get rid of the dreaded poll tax that was before it. Improving council tax, making it more progressive, as was intended right from the start, is massively important. You might have to tweak that one, I think, a bit. So I think great ideas. Brilliant that they're all coming through, and good luck to everybody. And let's have lots more.
And if people want to enter properly, how do they go about doing that?
Right, go to haywardfoundation.com, and there's two. There's the first part is the key challenge or opportunity presented by the COVID pandemic, and then the second part is the really serious part: is how do we fix the problem? How do we capitalise on this opportunity? And that's where the £25,000 prize is. We are very keen to get as many entries as possible and for them to focus on really practical things that could be implemented.
Gus O'Donnell, Lord O'Donnell, thank you very much for joining us on Times Radio. Right, Matt Kilcoyne from the Adam Smith Institute, Polly McKenzie from Demos. Let's pick through some of those. Let's start with you, Matt. Are you a fan of a free NHS for pets?
I it's definitely an idea that comes round again and again, but I'm not a fan of it, and for fairly simple reasons. The first one is that one of the justifications of having an NHS for humans is that we give a lot of dignity to humans and a human agency, the idea that an individual matters. And like, although a lot of people really do care about their pets, and they really do want them to get the best of care, there is still a level of ownership over a pet. There's a personal responsibility that you have for your pet, and they bring you a lot of personal joy. And that, and the idea that you then had a social cost, a huge expense, is like a real big worry for me. And actually, the NHS, when it was first set up, included things like opticians and dentistry, and all sorts of other elective surgeries that we now see as sort of, you know, enhancements issues, because it creates a huge amount of demand, whereas it actually doesn't increase the level of supply. And increasing the amount of veterinary service would be just a huge way of increasing the amount of demand for veterinary services without increasing the supply or quality, and therefore not increasing the level of care that actual pets get at the end of the day. So it would just be a huge money drain for me, but it would be immensely popular. People love their pets.
They do.
It would be a disaster for everybody, other things that aren't quite as sexy or as cute or as cuddly as their pets.
So was there anything else on those recorded voices of our listeners? Was there any of those that leapt out that you liked the sound of?
I quite like the Saturdays, elections on Saturdays. Originally, this was because you had pay packets on Fridays. And so there was a worry that you would get drunk if you fail to wake up on Saturday and go and vote. And that if you had the elections too close to Sundays, that the church would tell you how to vote. And so it's just by convention that they're done on Thursdays. And I think actually moving it to Saturday makes total sense to me. I quite like the idea of, I thought it was quite an interesting one, having the idea of taxing property based on the last sale price. That would cause all sorts of problems in a fully functioning market economy for housing. But our housing economy is so screwed up. And so incentivized to not have real values of property currently taxed very well, because large numbers of people who own homes in places where they have lots of political power, that it would at least start to change the way in which like property is well valued, especially in things like Mayfair and West London and out in Cornwall. That would make it a little bit more equitable.
Okay, let's bring in Polly McKenzie from Demos. Polly, any particular that you liked the sound of or really didn't like?
I mean, I think Saturday elections is something that, like, most sensible people could get behind, to be honest. I think it's really interesting that so many were about housing and property taxation. You know, after the Second World War, there was this agenda to basically nationalise pretty much everything, the commanding heights of industry, and it sort of sucked in all sorts of things to national control, including your right as a landowner to do basically what you wanted with your land. It said that that right now belonged to the state, and the state would give it out through planning permission according to a kind of complicated bureaucratic process. So it took it completely away from market forces. Over the course of the last 80 years, we've slowly liberalised and denationalised almost everything else that we nationalised in the post-war settlement. But we have kept and retained, partly because, exactly like Matt says, the people who benefit from this protectionism around land and planning permission are those who own houses, who are those who vote Conservative very often, or older people. They want to protect assets. So we've got this problem whereby, because we nationalised and have never really dealt with our planning permission system, we ration housing in this country, and then we pump huge quantities of money into this rationed number of houses through allowing people to have second homes, as one of your listeners mentions, but also crucially, especially right now, these really, really low interest rates. So it's no surprise the prices are going up and up and up, and we end up with a completely pointless value of our house. I can only get out the money supposedly in my house if I sell it, and then I've got nowhere to live. So I'm not sure any of the ideas are perfect, but I think that your listeners are completely right that across that system of housing, we're just in a mess. We need proper ways to build enough houses, and then you wouldn't need to worry about some people having two of them if they were genuinely enough for everybody, and people had to pay for the assets that they were accruing appropriately with the tax system instead of effectively being subsidised to hold assets in property rather than in other things that might be more productive for the economy.
Yeah, we did have loads and loads about housing. So I think everyone recognises it's a problem that needs tackling, albeit with different solutions. OK, let's stop talking about Times Radio listeners' ideas and let's talk about your ideas instead. Maps, maybe you've already entered, but what would be your big idea to try and win this £25,000 competition?
Oh, I bought everybody I know about this, but I would have free movement between Canada, Australia, New Zealand and the United Kingdom. And I would do it tomorrow. I'd do it yesterday, but I'd do it tomorrow to allow anyone who has a job offer or has a place of study the right to live and work here in the UK if they're from the other Five Eyes countries, effectively, minus the US. It allows us to say, OK, fine, Europe wasn't right for us. These are countries which we know people are very, very popular, very, very pro. They don't even see them as being separate countries or foreign countries. They see them as the place where Auntie Val lives or the cousins live. And it would be so simple, such a powerful block, a geopolitical block. It would automatically be the third largest economy. It would be, by area, would be the largest country in the world. It would span the world, and it would be a real difference in terms of, like, it would just change the way that we think about the world. Instead of being an island on the edge of Europe, we'd start to be that global Britain that we've said we wanted to be for decades.
I might resist asking Polly what she thinks about Matt's idea, because then Matt might have to say what he thinks about Polly. Polly, what's your big idea?
I think we need to completely transform the way we do benefits in this country, which is a bit dangerous because I was involved in transforming them before with universal credit, which is a complete mess. But basically, I think we should abolish the DWP. Lots of people get money off the DWP, like pensions or whatever. It's completely unconditional. Why is the DWP doing it? Handing out money, give it to the Treasury. And then if people are out of work for other reasons, there's basically three reasons. One, there aren't the jobs in the economy. Well, in the end, the business department should be dealing with that. Two, they haven't got the skills that they need. Well, the business department should be dealing with that and through education. And the other reason is if people have health conditions. And all of that should be transferred to the Department for Health, which should be radically localised as well, but and through personal budgets, giving people the opportunity to find and build their own package of support to get themselves back to work through improving their health. So there have been kind of pilots of these things, kind of independence and kind of combined payments. But we have this fundamental assumption that most people can't really be bothered to work, and you actually have to have a whole conditionality regime to sort of poke people because otherwise they won't want to work. The reality is the vast majority of people do want to work. What they can't do at the moment is control the money that is allocated to them in order to plan it and make it so that they can get back to work. So no more Department for Work and Pensions. If people are sick, they should be getting complete comprehensive care through Department for Health. And if they need skills, then the Education Department should be worrying about them.
Just very, very quickly to both of you, what's the stupidest idea you've ever come across which has actually sort of progressed in politics? Polly, you were in Number 10 working for the Lib Dems Joint Coalition. There must have been some daft ideas crossed your desk.
Oh, yes, loads. I shared a desk with Steve Hilton, so most of them came drifting across the desk from him. But, I mean, surely, you know, the bridge from Scotland to Ireland is surely one of the stupidest ideas that has any currency right now.
What about you, Matt?
Help to buy, massively ramping up demand whilst not increasing supply of housing, and then being shocked that it increased house prices out of reach. That was a dumb idea.
Well, that's it for this episode of Red Box. If you've enjoyed it, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. Maybe even leave us a rating because it helps with the mumbo jumbo charts. We release an episode every day, Monday to Thursday, featuring the best bits of my Times Radio show. You can listen to the whole thing Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. It's available on DAB online via smart speaker or on the Times Radio app. If you want to read more about all of the stories we've been discussing, then go to times.radio/subscribe.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two
Tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.